So if joy is the foundation of the atmosphere, there's yet much to be built in the atmosphere. And it's powerful in many, many ways. One of the things that's most powerful about atmosphere is the way it sets our affections. By affections, I mean our desires and motivations. A child is born into the world with wanting to know it's good to be me here with you, wanting joy. A child's born into the world curious, how does this place operate? Curious, wanting to know what's worth having and what's not worth having, but not born with an innate knowledge of what's worth having and what's not worth having, what's desirable, what's undesirable. Certainly want to stay away from things that are painful and to some extent want to enjoy things that are pleasurable, but that pain and pleasure don't explain all of our desires. Our affections are set by the community we're with, not so much by what they say as the atmosphere that they give off. We breathe them in. Most of our affections, our desires, are caught like the flu. And you look around and you see many of the absurd affections that people have. And you say, why is it? Well, they caught it from somebody. Someone they cared about, identified with, a group they wanted to be considered in, had a desire for a certain product. So catch the cold from one another. That's how our affections are set, which makes it hugely important when you go to school to see what the affections of the school community are set upon. It's interesting. I played high school football, enjoyed playing high school football, great game, but even I was struck by something of the absurdity of the fact that, say, my senior year, or actually every year, when we're playing the crosstown rivals, school ends at noon, everybody goes out to the stadium, we have a big pep rally, the football players are all down on the field, everybody's screaming and hollering, and everybody's excited about that game. And that's just playing the crosstown rivals. But the school math club could win the state championship, and they maybe get an announcement over the loudspeaker system. Congratulations to the school math club, they've just won the state championship. Well, every adult in that school has told every student what's really valuable, what's really desirable. Math, not so much. It's nice, kind of nice you won the state championship. But football, well, that's really desirable. And so we believe it. So then you ask the typical 8-year-old what he wants to be when he grows up. He wants to be a sports figure. He wants to be a celebrity, a television personality, wants to be a music star. Why? I mean, very few. Some do. There was a day when people wanted to be firemen, when they wanted to be policemen. And interesting, after 9/11, when the media was really honoring, rightly so, our firefighters, our policemen, you saw children wanting to pursue those careers. You'd ask children, what do I want to be? Why? Because the community had lifted this up as desirable. And so children do what children do. They breathe it in and they have their affections set. So when you go into a school or into a home for that matter, you ask, what is lifted up here? What does the atmosphere say is desirable, is worthy, is worth having, is worth pursuing? And when I put beautiful art on the wall, I'm saying that's valuable, that's desirable, that's worth looking at. When I put cartoon figures, giant bear, cartoonish character with a Bible verse coming out of its mouth. When I put that on the wall, I say to every child that walks into that room, this is what I think of you. This is what you really want. You want to be entertained. That's what's desirable, entertainment. And you really aren't very sophisticated. You like cartoon characters. Well, sure, if we tell our children that's what you like, they'll say, okay, didn't know that. I guess funny bears and funny squirrels, and that's what I like. They didn't know. On the other hand, if we put great paintings on the walls and an inspirational quote, they'll say, oh, that's what I like. That's what's desirable. That's worth pursuing. Children actually believe us, not because we've given a lecture, but because we have exhaled an atmosphere which they then inhale.
Charlotte Mason brings before us a text of her time that was written by H.G. Wells, and she talks about the adult bringing down the environment to the child's level. And we have that, especially here in the United States, in the consumerist culture that we are a part of. I mean, we have a special kind of environment for each age. You know, we have the infant and toddler stage, then we have the young child stage, and then we have the middle school stage, and then we have the teenage stage, and then the college stage. And so we have different kinds of environments for each of these stages. And in fact, we would say that's not necessary, that there is not an environment that's more conducive to a older student than it is to a younger student. But the environment is very natural. It's life as it is. And so there's real books and real things and real furniture. We don't have to have things brightly colored in order for a young child to be engaged, nor do we have to have things that are trendy to the cultural milieu, whether it's rock music or whether it's the latest celebrity in sports who's saying, "I like to read," but that we can have engaging, beautiful artifacts of a normative standard rather than of a cultural standard, and that the young people delight in them. In fact, they take no notice of them as they are. They do take notice of the beauty and the neatness and the form, but not necessarily in the specifics, because we don't want to use them as the way to knowledge. We're using them as a tool for knowledge, because it's just as we are comfortable in this atmosphere, then we can give attention to the things that we need to be giving attention to, the things that we want to know about. And so none of these things are used in a distracting way. They are used in a very comfortable way. Our classrooms and learning places are very inviting. The way we sit around a desk or a table, the way we engage in interacting with a text, whether the young children are sitting on the floor and looking up to the teacher who's sitting in the chair she reads, and our minds are meeting mind to mind. And the relationship helps that. It doesn't distract from that.